Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the hottest internet radio show and podcast, The Author's Lab, a place for an eclectic and lively discussion of the dynamic world of writing, publishing, and marketing of the written word. I am the sage, the host, Robert Batista. Follow me on Twitter at author R. Batista and make it a point to follow The Author's Lab on Blog Talk Radio. Today, we are excited to have as our guest, talented author and satirist, Arentino Wild. Arentino, welcome to the Author's Lab.
Hello, Rob. Hey, it is great to see you, and it's great to be on your show. I'm really excited about what we can do here.
Hey, thanks, Arentino. So let's start off by you giving us a synopsis of what your life as an artist and professional entails. Walk us through a day in your life, Arentino.
Goodness gracious. So as an artist, I typically get struck with a couple projects at once, and I have to choose. It's a bit difficult for me. I have to choose which one's the best for it. Then, as I'm sure you know, the real work begins.
Right.
I have a situation where I schedule, or how do you say, I have targets I try and hit every week. I give myself little 30-minute time blocks. And so a good day is I've hit 90 minutes on my project, right? And it's not the most – it's not the sexiest way of approaching things. I'd love to tell you I just get fired up with inspiration and just shoot these things out. But the discipline of moving in, like, you know, 90 minutes to 2.5 hours a day, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, really just gets the job done for me.
Your artistic production, Romeo and Juliet, a satire, billed as a mashup parody of Romeo and Juliet, seems intriguing. So what was your inspiration for creating this book? What set the wheels in motion?
Oh, goodness gracious. You know, thank you for asking. There have been so many sort of starts to this. The first one that comes to my mind I was 15 years old. I was a runaway at the time. And I was spending the night at one of my friend's houses, as you do when you're a runaway. And anyhow, we had been driving around that day, and we had picked up a kitten for somehow. And this was important to me, because I knew that I was going to – I had a girlfriend at the time, and I knew I would give this kitten to my girlfriend. This was my plan, right? So I knew that when she was – or what am I trying to say? I'm trying to say, like, when she wasn't around me and she had the kitten, she had something to remind her of me, right?
Right.
And then when I was there, she could trade up, right? So this is my plan. I got the kitten, and I was going to give it to the next day. So my friend Sean and I, we're going out, and we're going to pass the time between, you know, when I could be transferred on to the next house, and we decide we're going to rent a video. And to make, a very long story short, we get what's called an animation or an anime, and I had no idea what this was at the time. And we're at this weird place, a Hollywood video, which I'd never been to before, right? And we get this thing, and we come back to the house, and we're going to watch this anime. Right. This is my first experience with it. I meant to ask you, Rob, have you ever watched animes at all?
No, I haven't, I can say.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm talking a lot here. I didn't want to kind of cut you off. But
no, just continue with the story.
Sure, yeah. So we sit down, and as I say, I'm a runaway, and Sean immediately falls asleep. I'm leaned up against the wall with my backpack on and, you know, in my hoodie with a kitten in the pocket. And I'm watching this thing as I'm kind of settling in for the night. And I can see after a period of time that someone has taken the original subtitles of this animated video and they've put a new subtitle over it. And it's genius. They've put words into the mouth of these animated characters, and it's just, oh, I just could not stop laughing. So this was, to me, this brilliant piece of art. Somebody had taken a video from, like, a rental store, written their own script, put their own subtitles on it, you know, put it back onto the shelf, and just let the universe find it. And as I say, you could obviously tell that it was a better script than the original animated video. And I was thinking about this the other day as I was kind of reflecting on how I got started on this book. And one final thought came to my mind is, where on earth did I get a kitten?
Yeah, that's funny. So let me ask you, why did you choose Romeo and Juliet? Why this particular work and not another play by Shakespeare?
Sure. So Shakespeare, yeah, Romeo and Juliet to me has always seemed a little bit off. Right, it's one of two Shakespeare plays that he, we can say, borrowed from other people. Romeo and Juliet was actually written by somebody else, the original novella. I believe that one and Macbeth are the two he's copied. There were no copyright laws, so we can't say he, like, stole it. But anyhow, so Romeo and Juliet's always been a little bit off to me, because if you read it, it's not like a love story. The students are the children are dead in 72 hours. Right, it's not a lot of these other sort of true love sort of things. Sort of, I'm looking for a word here, but like it's not a true love. It's not a true love story. And if you look at it, and you look at it through the context of animated or a satire, it's already right there, ripe for the picking. Right, these guys have what we might call a bladder pressure contest. Right, in Act One, Scene One. Well, what if they actually had a bladder pressure contest? Right, so just change it a little bit, and everything all of a sudden starts to work out.
So you mentioned that Romeo and Juliet wasn't created by William Shakespeare, and you know I've heard so many stories about did Shakespeare actually exist, or did he write the plays that he was supposedly set to write? A lot of people feel that there were other authors back in the day that wrote the Shakespearean plays. One name that gets mentioned a lot is Francis Bacon. They say he wrote basically the Shakespeare plays, and sometimes there's other people. What do you think about that?
Sure. So I believe that there was a Shakespeare. I believe that this person existed, but the person used, I'm sure, proxy writers. And the other big myth about Shakespeare, I think, is that most people think he just sort of spat out these sort of genius plays, when in fact what he was doing, what he was doing was he was taking certain things and iterating on them. So he'd write a play, see how it worked on the stage and with his actors, and then come back and iterate on it. But I'm sure he also used ghostwriters for a period of time, just as a way of, you know, as a modern director or a modern screenwriter would. And so, yeah, that's my take on the was it Shakespeare or was it Bacon? I don't think it was Bacon. I think there was a person named Shakespeare, regardless of what it was. And let me tell you what, actually, the one big evidence for in my own mind of why this is because Shakespeare, to me, is an accident of history. What Shakespeare is doing is he found a grammarian, I believe is the word. He found a book of classical rhetorical tricks. We don't teach these so much anymore. But from the old classical world of how like the sophists would train their young lawyers out in ancient Greece. And he took these and inserted them into his play. So there's a bunch of technical stuff like diacope and other things which are escaping me right now. But those sort of things I think were inserted first. And it, as I say, it was – if it wasn't one person, it was certainly a franchise model of people who had like a sort of way of coming up with a script.
I love that. Interesting take, a franchise model. So getting back to your book, let's go right to the genesis. How did you start writing your book?
Sure. So, heavens to Betsy. Do you know Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies? Have you read that book or heard that story?
No, I never read that.
So anyway, somebody took Jane Austen's novel, Pride and Prejudice, and
I know about Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice. So you're saying somebody did a knockoff saying Pride and Prejudice and zombies.
Yes, exactly. It's a public domain work. So they took it and changed about a third of the words and set it this British manners play inside a zombie apocalypse. And I like to read. I read maybe 40, 60 books a year. And I was going through this on audio at the time in the car. And I was just blown away with just how much fun this was. There was obviously, you know, if you start changing just a few things at the beginning, so much changed that by the end of the end of it, you have original content. And I just thought this was just such genius. And then one day, I'm a private tutor by trade. One of my students had not done his homework, and he was trying to get me to write some sort of synopsis or some sort of variation on Romeo and Juliet, which is the play they were going through at the time. And anyhow, I wouldn't do it for him. I told him I wasn't going to do his homework. But the idea just struck me. And I went home that evening after the tutoring session and just wrote in like the next 3 hours, you know, Act 3, Scene 1 in this new particular version.
The cover design of your book is fantastic. Did you do it yourself or have someone do it for you?
Heavens no. No, I have a particularly capable virtual assistant who found a particularly capable cover illustrator who specializes in photogenic young women on covers. Right. So yeah. Right. Yeah, she's in Moscow, and I'm happy to send you her information if anybody wants to contact me. I'm happy to send business her way because she's really great and got the job done perfectly.
Speaking of the cover, it says it was in fact written by William Shakespeare and was edited for length and clarity by Arantino Wilde. Why did you do it that way?
Thank you. Yeah, I thought it was funny because there are a number of people out there who are just looking for cheap Romeo and Juliet texts. And I thought, so the joke is I've written a 35,000 word response to a 28,000 word play. I was so angry as a teen with being forced to read anything that, this stuck within me and burned and burned all those through all the years. So I thought it'd be so funny if somebody bought this thinking it was Romeo and Juliet, like by William Shakespeare. Right, and then, you know, edit for length and clarity, meaning like we were going to get some word changes here so that would be more readable or flow better or understandable, and just came out with this absolutely outrageous satire, which was, you know, trying to murder every sacred cow that Shakespeare ever wrote.
So what was the feedback for Romeo and Juliet, a satire? How was it received? What type of feedback did you get?
Thank you. So I've had some great editorial reviews, and I'm very proud of those. My experience is it's kind of a love-hate book. If you get into South Park, Archer, Family Guy, Frisky Dingo, oh, goodness gracious, the big ones are escaping me, BoJack Horseman, Rick and Morty, if you like those sort of things, you are going to love this book, right? It has the Shakespeare formula, which the Shakespeare formula is you have a sort of high part, which is philosophy, and then you have a low part, which in Shakespeare is body humor. What I've done is change the philosophy of, instead of Shakespeare's fatalism, which is the laziest of all philosophies, to a philosophy of agency, and change the fart jokes and the body humor into like a bunch of risque and sexy stuff. So if that sort of thing appeals to you, it is awesome. I put a lot of good work into this. It's probably my highest and best work. But if you don't care for those sort of satires or parodies or social commentary, no, it will not appeal to you at all.
You know, I did find a review on Amazon by Rabia Tanvir from Reader's Favorite, and she states in part, Romeo and Juliet, a satire by Arantino Wilde, is exactly what you think it is, but at the same time, it isn't. I will be honest, I was expecting to enjoy it as much. I wasn't expecting to enjoy it as much as I did. The humor and modern setting lured me in, but what made me stay was witty narrative, the smooth flow, and the absolutely amazing characters. It amazes me how the author has kept the original appeal and development of the characters while giving them his own spin. This imaginative and creative work of art needs more than 5 stars. Wow, Arentino. Sounds like you did your job masterfully.
Well, thank you. It's a lot of what I call writing technologies. So to get through this process, I took the original play and I wrote down my own summary of every scene. So there are 24 scenes and as I say, I built their own summary. From then I wrote an inverse of every summary. So you start asking yourself questions like, well, what if Juliet wasn't in this because she loved Romeo, but what if Juliet just really hated her dad, right? Or what if Romeo wasn't, as I say, struck by true love, but just was so attracted to certain, certain assets or certain proportions on Juliet, right? And he was just a complete loser otherwise. What would happen here? And as you start building the play out, as I say, I work on flashcards, you start to understand the weave a lot better. So if you make a change in Act 5, Scene 2, you can see how it needs to have some sort of foreshadowing in Act 2, Scene 3, or whatever the case may be. And so, yeah, I was really happy I was able to build a weave around this and that people are enjoying it, regardless of my own skill. I mean, this could have been just a lucky break that I wrote something that people are enjoying, and I'm happy if it is. But, yeah, I'm really been so blessed with the feedback that I've been getting from it.
So a lot of writers have different times to be creatives. A lot of them tell me the morning is their creative time. Some say the afternoon, the evenings, quiet around 2 or 3 in the morning when everybody else is asleep. What's your most creative time of the day?
Heavens. So I work such an unusual schedule with all of my tutoring clients. I've worked out a system. Actually, this is not my first book. It's my first fiction book. I've written several tutoring books ahead of this. And so to me, writing is like getting to the gym. The hardest part is getting to the door and getting started.
Right.
So, as I say, I build a time. I'm looking for a word here. Yeah, I build a time frame of targets I want to hit during the week, and I give myself a little credit every time I hit 30 minutes of good focus time, in front of my high-value work. And what I do to make sure I'm creative and in the flow zone is I've actually found something, and I'm looking it up right here, so I'll make sure I get it absolutely correct to give to your audience here. But I believe it's Dr. Jeffrey Thompson, and he has these really great, like, flow state, like, binaural beats, right? So it's just this sort of, like, warm, you know, I put my earbuds in, and I listen to Dr. Jeffrey Thompson. He's on YouTube, and you can buy stuff anywhere. He has these really great sort of just flowing, relaxing sort of music, mind massaging music. And I put those in, and I'm in the zone. That's what it takes. And so, to me, I've been so blessed because with that sort of portability, I don't have to wait for inspiration at a particular time or day. Because heavens, you know, I never know my own schedule, and if I'm going to be able to
get
to that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thanks for giving that doctor's information out. So let me ask you, Arentino, how did you get your book published? Did you go mainstream, self-published, or did you go the independent route? And talk about any challenges you had in the publishing aspect.
Sure, thank you, sure. I self-published. I just put this out there. So please, you know, support your indie authors. I did this. I'm ashamed to say I did this a little bit because I did not give going through a regular publisher a full effort. I want to say I contacted 4 or 5 or maybe, you know, somewhere between underneath 10 publishers, and I don't think I got any responses, maybe 1 or 2 responses back. So people weren't even reading my emails or pitches or at least responding to them. And I essentially said, you know what, I'm going to go my own way. That was fine for me as far as the text went, but – heavens to Betsy, some of the jokes I have are exclusively inside the illustrations, and finding an illustrator who was willing to work with me and get down to the sort of detail I needed into making those jokes was easily the most difficult part of this process.
So
I would say if you can get around using an – or go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish.
Yeah, if you can get around using an illustrator – I encourage all your authors to do so, unless you specifically have a talent at illustrating. I do not. One of my big life regrets. Yeah, if you have a talent at illustrating, the sky's the limit. But otherwise, yeah, please, please, if you can make do an illustration less text, I would encourage you to do so.
Let's talk about Aretino Wilde, the person. Where did you grow up? And I know you said earlier that you were a runaway. Where did you grow up, and how was your childhood like?
Sure. So as I say, I was a runaway. That was on the East Coast mainly, up in the kind of the D.C. area. There. I was actually born in Dallas, Texas. That's where I live now.
Okay.
And Aretino the person is a little difficult because he was this rebellious teenager who dropped out of school, high school twice. Think about that. Dropping out of high school, going back, then dropping out again, and then finally going back, graduating, then going on to college and doing a bunch of fun things. He dropped out of high school twice, went to college, got a double degree, cum laude, and eventually went on to work for a bunch of places. But, you know, somehow the creative itch just kind of kept on scratching in the background.
Wow, man, I commend you for that, man. Dropped out of high school twice and then went back and got a college degree, man. I definitely – kudos to you, Aretino. So were you a reader when you were in high school? Were you a reader when you were in high school and college? And if so, what were some of the authors and books you enjoyed?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, unfortunately, no. In high school, I was distracted by women. I thought that was my big – yeah, so you had time to read, right, when you're chasing tail all the time. Heavens, yeah, I was a late bloomer. I had some sort of really difficult semester in college where I had to read something like 20 or 30 books over the summer. And somehow it just always kind of stuck with me. I do read a lot. There have been a lot of really interesting or influential books on me, but I read, you know, or read or listen to at least 30 plus books a year right now. And as I say, as being a tutor, that was another big development for me as both Aretino and as in my own cognition, in that you get put with very, very capable students, you know, students who have already written books at 16 or students who have their own patents or students who are going on to Yale or Harvard or, you know, have internships at the World Health Organization. And just to keep up with those students, I really found I had to up my game. The biggest books that come to my mind, which would be, I think, relevant for your audience, is one is a bit of an obscure book called The Hidden Key to Harry Potter by John Granger. This is a particular favorite of mine. I give it off to most of my high-end students, give it away. And that book deconstructs Harry Potter. This is valuable to me because I have a degree in history, or a double degree in history and sociology. I'm typically the person in the room who's deconstructing a text. That's kind of my thing. When I walk into the room, I'm the guy who can do this. John Granger did this for Harry Potter, and like I felt like I was in the presence of greatness.
Wow.
I went to the river, and the river showed me I am small. So he deconstructed Harry Potter and just followed the weave and showed me that there were so many other things going on inside of it. I encourage everybody in the audience to buy a copy and read it for yourself. And just it's like watching Harry Potter going from like a black and white television to like 3D IMAX is the difference. So that one, and then just to be brief for your audience, I'd say the other one is I got turned on to Will Durant, the historian, sometime after college, and I've been through almost all of his stuff, and those are the other sort of big developments in my mind and as a writer and thinker.
So many people, and you talked about audiobooks, which is really, really blowing up now and getting more and more popular every day. So many people are reading books and stories on their cell phones, with flash fiction and micro stories becoming more and more popular. It seems like the attention span of the reading public is getting shorter by the minute. Do you think this radically changes the future of how we write and publish our books?
Yes, it's a short answer. There's always going to be a flight to quality for the people who want that sort of thing. And I'd say for those people, it's actually a sort of golden age. I believe that there are more and better books, right? When I was younger, if you wanted to read fantasy, you had a J.R.R. Tolkien, right? Now you have so many things which bend the genre, reverse the genre, do so much more, like a Harry Potter book, and so forth. So for those people, it's out there. I found a new genre this year. Most of my favorite books, fiction books, have been written this year, and they are in an obscure genre called lit RPG. And oh heavens, I've just been taken by them. But for most people, right, we are getting into what I call a post-literate society. People know how to read in the sense that they can read Twitter and a menu at McDonald's, or enough to get through some sort of internet article, which is in their inbox. But beyond that, most people don't have the time or the bandwidth, because they live in a verbal and short snippet world, to actually enjoy or appreciate something deeper. So yes, unfortunately, I think the market's just going to cater to the broad majority of people who unfortunately are in this deprived position of not having the big critical reading skill set.
Yeah, that's my point exactly as well. I've been thinking about this for a while. It looks like reading as we know it or knew it is going to evolve and actually maybe go out the window. And, you know, everybody's attention span, not only children, not only teens, but also adults, I've noticed,
right,
is just getting less and less and less. And, you know, these micro stories and flash fiction and, you know, possibly maybe audiobooks, that's why they're more popular, is that when you're in your car, when you're working out in the gym, you know, when you're running, you know, you can listen to the book as opposed to read it. But yes, right, definitely, Arantino, that's an excellent point. So let me ask you this. In a time where hundreds of thousands of books are published every year in so many different types of platforms, many authors want to know how they can make their book stand out from all the rest. How do you do this, Arantino? How do you handle the marketing aspect of being an author?
Sure. Well, I talk to excellent and capable podcasters like yourself, Rob. That's my strategy.
I thank you.
If you can get out to podcasters and people with audiences who are interested in what you're trying to do. And in my specific niche, I'm trying to advertise or promote a quality product. I have a larger vision in mind. I have a parody for more or less every book that is compulsory read for high schoolers. So I have a Great Gatsby in mind with a Cthulhu sort of Lovecraftian monster. I have an Old Man in the Sea, where it turns into much more of an adventure or global like mystery story. All these sort of things. So that's my larger goal and my larger vision. So you have to find a way to connect to your audience and offer them something really, really like your best work, whatever that is, in whatever genre.
So let's talk social media. Are you on social media prevalently? And if you are, which one do you think is the best for your brand?
Oh, heavens. So, yes, I am on social media. My experience with social media is, again, you're trying to cater to an audience who is reading at a very shallow level. So unless there's already a group around mashups or parodies or satires or these sort of things, you have to be able to reach those core people. So Facebook is probably the best for that. But unfortunately, I have not found social media to be particularly effective for my projects.
In closing, what would you say, Arantino, is your proudest achievement?
Oh, heavens. My proudest achievement? So I love that I wrote this book, and I love that I was able to provide a bunch of things for the Shakespeare people and a lot of things for the satire people. But my favorite piece about this book was that you can also read it. You can read it as a parody. You can read it as a Shakespeare fan fiction text. You can read it however you like. But it's also, you can read it as an unofficial prequel to the Wachowski fever dream that is The Matrix. I don't know if you ever watched The Matrix when it came out, but if you ever sat down, looked at this and said, man, how did that robot war kick off? I've answered that question.
Yeah, great set of films, The Matrix. Definitely really good. So, Arantino, if people want to get in contact with you, can you give out your website address and any other contact info you'd like?
Sure. So you're always, any of your audience is welcome to email me directly. I'm always delighted to hear feedback and good or bad on my work. And that's rnjsatire@gmail.com. And then I'm on Facebook. You can look me up, as I say, Romeo and Juliet of Satire on Facebook.
This has been the Author's Lab with me, Robert Batista. My mission is to give creative people a platform to show you who they are. One of my stories, My Baby Has No Name, can be read for free online at spillwords.com. My guest has been Arantino Wilde. Make sure you pick up his fascinating book, Romeo and Juliet, a Satire. Thank you so much, Arantino, for being my guest on the Author's Lab.
Thank you.
Have a great rest of the day.
You too. Goodbye.
Bye now. This is Robert Batista signing off with this little rhyme. Today is yesterday's tomorrow. Though each one may bring joy or sorrow, God's message is clear to those with sight. Through darkness always comes the light.